Hello and welcome to another episode of Inside OSU, Oklahoma State University's signature podcast. I'm Dr. Kenneth Sewell, Vice President for Research here at OSU. OSU is among the nation's top tier of research institutions. Our scientists and scholars conduct cutting-edge research in disciplines spanning the range of our comprehensive university. In today's podcast, you'll listen in on the March edition of OSU Research on Tap. That's the monthly interview show I host at the tap room of Stillwater's Iron Monk Brewery. There I talked with Senior Vice President Jerome Lothridge and Senior Associate Vice President Zach Miles about how OSU's stature as a premier research university helps to drive economic development and industry connection locally and all across our state. Well, sometimes I like to start these out with asking you to give me the Thanksgiving version of your job. So you're at Thanksgiving dinner, talking to people in your extended family who maybe haven't followed your career real closely, and they've heard your title or what you do. So let's start with Jerome. So Jerome, you have the broadest title, this Vice President, Senior Vice President for Operations. So let's start with you. What, particularly when it comes to this topic, what do you actually do? What does that mean?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me. This is a kick. Absolute blast. So the role is a new one. It's one that OSU's president, Casey Shrum, devised. And at the outset, its primary objective is to help work on a strategy, not merely for here on our Stillwater campus, but for the entire OSU system. So among primary roles at the outset, in addition to helping with the industry relationships and the cultivation of our institutes, which I suspect we'll talk about in a bit, the driving of our process that will lead to university-wide strategy is task number one.
Now, Zach, you have a title that I actually devised because you work for me.
Yes, you do.
Jerome works for President Shrum, you work for me, but you work together. We'll get into that. But it's the mouthful, Senior Associate VP for Technology and Economic Development. So if you're talking to Aunt Millie or Uncle Joe at Thanksgiving, how do you tell them what you do?
After I've lost them with the title.
Well, you don't tell them that part.
The simplest way that I explain it to them is that I liaise. I'm a connector.
Connector.
Yep, I liaise between OSU and the rest of the community. And that's internal to OSU and external to OSU. So it's kind of like Tetris to a certain extent. So trying to take all the puzzle pieces on campus with new innovations and trying to connect or liaise with industry to turn those into life-changing products and service. So I stick on that. We make things that change your life, or to try to bring the university into Oklahoma State University. And so really pitch at the dinner table. We try to take ideas and turn them into something useful.
Turn them into something useful. All right. Most people think the university's purpose is just educate students. That's why it's here. And in fact, this entire show, we do OSU Research on Tap in part to help our community understand and expand the horizon to understand how the research enterprise solves, real problems and enhances the education of our students while also solving these problems. But now we have people like you telling us the university is here to engage and help the private sector create economic development. So how does that mesh with the teaching and research and extension? How does the economic piece connect with the basic mission of the university?
Yeah, it connects extremely well. Most of the things that you use during your day have some type of university connection to them. So think even just Gatorade or penicillin or other things are created at the university. But specifically how it ties in for students is creating that real world opportunity for them. So you have your academic learning, which you're really excited about, but being able to apply that while you're at an institution, be able to actually see something you work on, transform from things that you're doing into something that's valuable in a company to take that forward and want to work with that company. So driving that relationship closer to the academic piece really helps all of our students out, one, find jobs, but two, really apply what they've learned and know they're excited about it and want to be in the industry and provide them a path that they can use the great degree that they get at OSU.
I see Victoria over here is one of our drone geniuses. What's going on right now at the Ham Institute for American Energy, just down the road here in Oklahoma City, a new initiative of Oklahoma State University by the beneficence of Harold Ham, the founder of Continental. What's happening right there is Some of our drone experts are working alongside our Energy Institute in creative ways to address energy-specific needs. But whereas we used to put folks in F-250s and drive them up and down pipelines, now we have the capacity, or will in short order, to use our drone technology to solve an actual real-time project for industry. And then if you layer on top of that, there'll be 250 prospective students tonight with Dr. Shrum in the atrium of the Ham Institute being recruited to Oklahoma State University. And we may or may not run them up on the fourth floor and let them have a little look at what drones look like, give them a sense of what they can do. That's an example of how we take it all the way from prospective student to industry utilization, and that's all because of a university. That didn't happen unless we've painted this thing orange. And that's an example, I think, of the power, particularly of a land-grant university.
I wanted to come back to that land-grant.
Well, let's do that.
So land-grant, people hear the term. We use it a lot because we are one, and that institution down south is not one, and we don't hold that against them. But we're the premier land grant in the state, and we also have the HBCU land grant at Langston, and we have the Tribal Nations College that's a land grant in Okmulgee. What is it about the land grant mission? How should we think about that in terms of its connection with this whole economic development piece?
Yeah, I think it makes it absolutely core to who we are, Ken. And so I think of it this way. If you go back to our founding documents, and they are fascinating to read. I mean, I don't think there's anything as American, as an institution, as the land grant. I mean, run around Europe, go to other parts of the world. They don't have this notion of institutions that are here to solve society's great issues, to educate folks, to meet the real needs of the culture around them, and we do. And so I think that if you take examples like we've just talked about, the integration of our research with industry need, I think that fulfills the unique land grant mission now going on almost 150 years in the making. Nothing fulfills that brief or makes us better stewards of that heritage than the work that goes on when we take a product and put it in the hands of folks and improve their lives. That's what we're here to do, among other things, but I think that's central to who we are, and that's what makes the engagement with industry so exciting to me, is that it's a fulfillment of who OSU was from its very outset.
So at the outset, we kind of thought about industry as the agriculture industry, and that's still a big part of who Oklahoma is, but the aerospace industry, the energy industry,
healthcare,
broader than that now. So you two have these complementary roles, I think. I got to be careful with this because, Zach, I hired you. President Shrum hired you. I don't want to have a situation here where you steal one of my guys here. But tell me about how you view your roles as intersecting or complementing each other. Zach, how do you, other than wanting to pick on this guy, which I know you do from time to time.
No, I do. Thanks for letting me go first with that. I really appreciate that, too. it's very complimentary, and in fact, it's a little bit of I'd call it a team, although we arm wrestle every now and then, and I win at that and other things that we compete with. But there's so much going on that needs to be done that it ends up just being coordinating efforts and who's where and who's doing what and what should our organization at Cowboy Innovations be doing within the VPR's office? What is Jerome doing that we can either complement or can actually kind of assign tasks, or can you help introduce us? So I'd view it very complimentary, but it's a big job. And if we were not complimentary or I lost arm wrestling, it'd be a very different situation, but it's needed. It's one of those areas that needs to grow and add to.
Jerome, how do you see that?
Yeah, and while I wouldn't suggest we have it perfect yet, I do think that the sort of complementary nature of how we work might be something that we imagine happening at the university writ large. So we have these fantastic colleges and schools, all with deep expertise, all with specific missions, that I think as we chart a course for the next 5 years or so under Dr. Shrum's leadership, strategically, I think the opportunity for our colleges and schools to work even more integratedly together, maybe along the lines of what we've done on a very small basis, portends a lot of success. You know, the world is interdisciplinary, right? We live in an interdisciplinary world.
I don't know. I'm at the university, so we don't at a university.
Right.
We live in
the world is interdisciplinary, and I think that as we prepare students for their post college lives, I think we do them a great service when we demonstrate that. And clearly, we're going to have our majors, we're going to have our specialties.
Sure.
You do, I do, the audience does. We won't not do that. But to the extent we can expose them and even expose, for instance, our research enterprise to this notion that things like energy and healthcare and agriculture and aerospace, those are all interdisciplinary in nature. Mm. And so to the extent we demonstrate that in how we carry out our work, I think we're just ahead.
Now, you mentioned the Ham Institute.
Yep.
I want to get into some of your signature projects that each of you are kind of involved with. And maybe it starts at Ham, maybe it starts elsewhere, but what are some of the high priority signature projects you're involved in right now?
Yeah, I think that I'll lead off with Ham,
because
that's front of mind. I just came from meeting with Mr. Ham, so that one's fresh on my mind. When we think about solving society's big issues, energy security has to be among them. So, and not we don't think about energy security as much within our borders, but our neighbors throughout the world do. And as energy goes,
I think we've been all thinking about that a little bit lately.
So. As energy, so goes national security, so goes personal security. Yeah, you don't have to go past the first page of the Times right now to affirm that. Well, Oklahoma State ought to have a role in this conversation. And clearly, our geosciences are fantastic. Engineering's excellent. But energy is more than that. It includes business. It includes ethics. It includes communication and policy and advocacy. And all of these components go into this interdisciplinary part of our economy that is the energy sector. Well, that's the conjecture of the Ham Institute, is that we work collaboratively across our schools and colleges and also with other universities to bring to bear the very best of thought to prepare students for leadership that thinks integratively and in ways that prepare them to lead and not necessarily just to specialize. Again, we're going to continue to develop fantastic geoscientists, exceptional engineers, really first-rate business people. But to the extent we do that with the broadest possible view, that's what the Institute's after. And that's an example.
And so I think there's a tendency on the part of the public, hear the name Ham, they know the history in this state. It's a fantastic history that's been a part of financial success of the oil and gas industry. Yeah. In this, but there's a tendency to think, well, that's oil and gas, that's tradition, I think we all know there's a place for the oil and gas industry.
Sure.
But I think I've heard that the Ham Institute is thinking forward too.
Oh, yeah.
From that. So.
Yeah, in fact, the conversations we had just moments ago weren't about natural gas or oil. They were about carbon capture, about hydrogen.
Hydrogen's a big deal.
Yeah,
big
and these are very salient issues as we speak today. So no, I think the notion of how do you power the world, how do you extend energy security to the developing world? I mean, these are the kind of questions that don't all begin and end at the wellhead, but rather they require of us a great deal of creativity, a great deal of collaboration, and innovation of the type that the shale revolution was fantastic. It's a marker in American history. It changed many of our lives. That's not where innovation stops with energy. And it won't be at the Ham Institute either.
Fantastic. We'll put a pin in that. We might be able to come back to some other things.
Sure.
But Zach, talk about some of your kind of signature projects you're involved with.
Yeah, a lot of great things that are going on. So we launched a rebrand of the Economic Development Office in September of 2021, so Cowboy Innovations. And since then, we've really been trying to build out some of the resources, one, to attract industry or be able to take ideas forward. So a couple of those of reimagining what the research park looks like on 6th and Sanger. What resources can we build there that companies are looking to expand or relocate or have a place to come to or support startup companies or create a culture of innovation? the team, I have an amazing team which has been working on Tech Showcase. And I've had Tech Showcases in the past which have been intended to again promote what OSU has that industry might be interested in. So we have one coming up April 1st in Tulsa, healthcare. So
healthcare technology.
In healthcare technology. So what can industry learn about what OSU has to offer, not only personnel-wise, but facilities and students and everything else. We've redone some of our agreements to make it easier for our industry to collaborate with us.
Because I think that's been a historical bugaboo, to use a colloquial term, of like, university's hard to work with. So what have you done that's made it easier?
We've included the name FAST in our agreement. No, I'm just kidding. So we put together a fast track agreement, which for the most part, what industry is concerned about is the intellectual property that comes out of it.
So if they invent something, they want to own it.
They want to own it or control it and not have some type of, think that the university is going to get promiscuous somehow and look for another partner to engage with. So we've created these agreements that allow them to wrap up that intellectual property, and some of the publication issues or confidentiality areas that come up, so that they can have confidence when they're engaging with us that what they really want to do is make money on the back end or have students that are well trained. That's an easy process, because I'm less interested in focusing on the transaction. I really want to get to the relationship with these companies. So they go, I want to come back to OSU. I want to do more great things with OSU. You have so many different things that you presented to us. How do we focus less on me and you negotiating and more on let's do more of those things? And So that's been the intent behind it.
So it sounds like he's writing a billboard for you, I think. it sounds like you're trying to make sure that OSU is open for business.
That's the best way to describe it, is that we're here, we're open, and we really want to be, we don't want to be the best kept secret in the world.
Yep.
We want to be the best known entity in the entire world. And so what OSU has to offer, facility, technology, research park, students, creative hackathons or research that we have, that they know that that's there and that they can engage, and it's an easy engagement with us as much as it can be.
Now, Zach, you've talked quite a bit about students and the hands-on piece. And Jerome, I know you're very involved in the strategic kind of the setting the strategy for the university going forward. So tie this back to the students for us somehow.
Oh yeah. So just came over lunch from a meeting with a group of industry folks convened by the Oklahoma City Chamber. And so there was aerospace, bio informatics. There was some biotech represented there, some venture capital types. And we asked this question, okay, if we're aiming to create an ideal graduate, what does she look like? Obviously, she's going to be technically competent. She's going to have her degree, and we know we're good at that. But what other competencies will she take to her post-college life, whether into graduate school or into the workplace? And these are fantastic conversations. This is integral, by the way, to how we're going to run the strategy process, 2 ears, one mouth, right? And the listening component of this with respect to industry, it's almost shocking that when we sit down and say, hey, tell us what you need, they're almost skeptical, because they say that's not how universities act. Mm. You're usually talking.
Telling us, right? what we're going to get.
So yeah. Just having come from one of these, yep, and asking this question, what competencies does that ideal graduate have? It's super illuminating. And what you find is, at no point, these are folks that have hired a bunch of OSU grads. They love hiring pokes, and who wouldn't? And they're always technically competent. And they said, here's the reality for this next generation. It's the things that we would know to be the case: communication capability, problem solving, teamwork, the things that if you've gotten to this room by this point in your lives, you figured out, but that aren't necessarily going to be the strengths of this next generation, especially when we just interrupted their lives for 2 years, right? In the formative part for some of our incoming freshmen, as an example, well, they've had a disruptive last, maybe 16, 17, 18th year. So it'd be kind of silly to expect that these would be natural among them. Well, these are what we're hearing from industry when we ask and stop and listen, is they'll tell you what it is that they need in a new employee, and it is exceptionally helpful. And believe you me, we're going to incorporate that. And that's where the fun's going to begin. Okay, where do we fit that in? How do we make sure that those capabilities are given to our students, are cultivated in them across the university, so that it doesn't matter if they're a business school student or if they're an A&S or if they're at SEET or if they're in, it doesn't matter. They're going to have a common set of competencies that they can take into the marketplace. We think that's the way that you best prepare our students. They're going to get excellent teaching. But on top of that, if we're very deliberate in how we equip them for those extracurricular capabilities, I think that's how we win.
Jumping ahead, this unique conversation with one of the companies that I know when I traveled there, they thought the only thing I was going to try to pitch was a technology.
Like you're just going to try to sell them a technology?
Yeah, just going to try to sell them something. And it was so funny to go on the tour, and they had some new ideas that they didn't know what to do with. I said, great, we'll just contact the Spears Business School, and why don't we have some students put some business plan around it? And they're like, you would do that? I'm like, yeah, fantastic. Or you've got this research, and you're trying to do alternative fuels here. You want to set up a little mini lab down at OSU, and we can test? Well, you'd be willing to do that. And so it's refreshing, I think, to industry that academics, or at least OSU, is coming to them listening instead of talking and being able to have all the resources there to say, I hear you. Now let me make the connection.
Why are you passionate about this area? What drives you to do this sort of work?
In all honesty, it's seeing lives change. The work we do literally transforms the world for the better, from life-changing therapeutics to even if it's just a simple pen or a new pen. It is so fun to engage with industry, researchers, students, small businesses, and see that idea literally blossom into something that is changing the world. And so to get up and have some type of small part in that is fun.
How'd you come around to it? How did it happen?
So I'll tell the long story, but I'll keep it short, I promise.
The long story short.
I'll keep the long story short. I was headed to med school, sort of. So my older sister, who's 20 years older than me, is a pediatric surgeon, and she said, you have to go this route. And she was a very motherly figure to me. And so I said, fantastic.
It didn't sound like an invitation. It sounded like an order.
It was like, yeah, here you go, but I pass out at the sight of blood. So I thought that wasn't going to be the right
path, not a good recipe.
No, yeah. It's not getting over. I really knew it when you started those videos when you're in class and they said, mm-hmm, if anybody's going to have any type of problems, you can leave to the bathroom. Like, I just got up because I knew I was going to have problems. I still passed. I still did a great job. But I love the sciences. So I had an uncle who was a judge that said, every patent attorney that I know is boring, and you've got personality. And so you should literally go to law school and be a patent attorney. So I went to law school, ended up trying to be a patent attorney. That didn't work well because I don't like sitting in front of a computer and reading or writing. And so I ended up in the academic world. That they offered me an opportunity my last semester of law school at the University of Utah to start there, and just fell in love with it. And so took it from there and have never looked back.
Okay, so if you're a cross between a pediatric surgeon and a lawyer, you can get it. You now know what line of work you're going
to. It's either schizophrenic or it's awesome.
Jerome, what drives you? Why are you passionate about this?
Yeah, let me give this example. So I've just come to the university a few months ago. I've been the last two decades in business on the other side of this relationship that Zach and I work on. But here's the really compelling part, and you should all be proud, all you pokes. So for a short, happy time, back a few months ago, I was the Secretary of Health for the state. Fantastic timing, right ahead of the global pandemic meltdown. So in the early days, it was long or about 7th of March when case number one sprung, you'll remember it, in Tulsa. And then it was game on. And among things that we were ill prepared for were all of them, including personal protective equipment, testing. You remember all the stuff, right? We were ill prepared for a pandemic, generally speaking. And so the few of us who were tasked by the governor with trying to figure out which way was north started asking around, what do we do about this? Because we don't have testing. It doesn't exist. We don't have the capacity. and this thing is moving from the West Coast and the East Coast right toward the middle and us. Well, who rides to the rescue but Oklahoma State University, and not merely the university, but Vet Med. And so you may recall this, maybe looking at it from the outside, but I can tell you, when you wake up and you're trying to think, no kidding, how are we going to get testing to save people's lives? And the answer is up here in Stillwater, and is the innovation of leveraging veterinary medicine in ways that right now, on the postmortem that's being done in the White House, they're looking at what happened here in Oklahoma. How did you solve testing? Well, we did it with creative innovation, using resources that we had, and an institution that just refused not to say yes. So at every turn, when we said, we have a problem, is there any way that Oklahoma State University can step into the gap here? It was a consistent yes. So why am I here? It's because what I saw happen when a land-grant university mobilized its resources and came to society's needs, I saw it happen. And again, you should be proud if you're flying an orange flag right now, because that's our recent history as OSU. That's who we are. It's not surprising now to me. But if you ask me why I'm here and what compels me, it's when the next thing comes, when the next trial, when the next social issue that seems to have no solutions, well, I bet they come out of Stillwater.
I hope you enjoyed the discussion about how OSU research drives economic prosperity in Oklahoma and beyond. Every month, our Research on Tap event showcases members of the OSU research community with a great story to share. You can find out about future OSU Research on Tap events and attend them live. Just follow us on Facebook or go to research.okstate.edu. And you can view our archived installments on Inside OSU, OSU's streaming platform. Just go to insideosu.com, click on Shows, and scroll down for Research on Tap. And that's it for this episode. I'm Dr. Kenneth Sewell. Join us next time for another Inside OSU podcast.